This is Pure Decking, show number, whatever the show number is, 535 for Thursday, September the 7th, 1813. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and let's go ahead and announce it now so I don't forget. No show next week. Tonight, we have a madman. What's up, madman?
Nothing much. I've got bourbon, and life's gotten much better since then.
Ah. Cool. Oh, we have a Sardonyx as well, I think. Or is that something Cycros? I don't know. It's things acting weird. And we have an Aryu. What's up, Aryu?
Not much. Not much at all. I thought you'd stop drinking, Madman, because the Daystar seems to be getting a lot warmer. Which means it's getting closer.
I've been drinking lice, but I don't want to actually die, so I do drink enough for us not to actually fall into the sun.
Okay.
Did you say less or lice? Because drinking lice is very different.
I'm going with less because I don't like bugs.
But you will eat the bugs on nothing and be happy.
I will finally lose weight if they move to that diet.
Madman, I'll be happy that you're losing weight, but I will not be happy to be eating the bugs.
It's like what is it, a Ginger 32 or something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It was Agenda 2021 in 1992 when they first ratified the agreement that they were going to do this. They missed their target by 2021, so they bumped it out to 2030. It was a great reset.
I have access to cows. I'm not going to be eating the bug.
Cool. I'm just interested in how they're going to flip it in. Yeah, like, you're not going to... People are going to snap out of it pretty quickly when they realize that steak is no longer available. I can't see how they're planning to do it, but... Then again, I wouldn't have thought mass compliance for masks and fucking super-injected AIDS would have been a thing either.
You know how they're going to do it. They've already started culling your herds.
I know.
Well... That, and they'll start doing, oh, it's a meatless alternative. You remember when the pandemic first started and everybody panic bought everything? What was still
except
on the shelf?
Four. Yeah, the only company that can't survive without government subsidies, just like the green energy people, couldn't survive without government subsidies.
So
it's funny, a younger person this week, or last week, said to me, the problem with the world is we've organized it on science and technology. The only thing is the people running the show know nothing of neither.
What would he want the world organized on, then? Demon worship and human sacrifice?
No, he said the problem is because the people running the show don't know anything about science or technology, yet they're trying to fucking run the show.
Well, that's because we, you know, have octogenarians who refuse to retire. And somehow
it was pretty
Steve
funny then
because
the young guy was then instantly accused of being a reader and was mocked and ridiculed for the rest of the day. Self-education.
I remember
for being
that.
A reader?
Yeah. Dude, it was a building site full of men. Just ripping the shit out of each other for no fucking reason, but just to have fun.
I remember Idiocracy. It was a good movie. You know, you were accused of being homosexual for trying to read.
Pretty funny. But anyway, what do we got on the show tonight?
Tonight, we're going to start with a opening course of Google being shitty, then move into a continued course
of eating that.
Gizmodo being shitty, and then China being shitty, and Microsoft is only not being shitty because the European government's forcing them to be less shitty in Europe. So... It's a whole shit sandwich.
You want to see something amazing? Check out Nvidia's fucking profit this quarter.
Oh, I know. Well, they've cornered the market on the CUDA core stuff for AI. I mean, Nvidia cards are practically a requirement for running large language models. So,
I know they're crushing it, man. That company is just—I don't know—they're just nailing it right now. Every step they've done has been the right one.
For the people writing the large language models, chose that particular archetype instead of another graphics card to build it around?
Well, when they first started writing a lot of this stuff, CUDA was way farther along than AMD's GPU processing. So, now I think some of the AMD stuff is supposed to be catching up now, but I honestly haven't looked into it lately. So, we'll see. But yeah, it was all written against NVIDIA's CUDA, at least initially. So, and of course, now there's open source projects out there with 5 lines of Python. You could be querying large language models. And yeah, they all use, you know, NVIDIA's CUDA libraries on the back end because it's all running through PyTorch. So,
yeah, I saw that profit last week. I was like, holy shit, I missed the train.
So, well, let's go ahead and read this on Google here. Just out of curiosity, is anybody using Chrome as their browser right now?
No, I'm still using Firefox. Although, I'm thinking of looking at some other things.
Brave is all right.
Firefox, for some reason, has trouble loading Pizza Hut in my area.
Yeah, that's
a good thing, Madman. That's a good thing.
We weren't just talking about losing weight.
Yeah, well, if it's that website, it could also be others. I just haven't discovered them.
Psychro says he has it installed. Well, I think we've all got it installed, because, yeah. Although, pretty much, if Firefox doesn't work, I tend to pop open Brave for a website. So, but anyways, that's the reason I ask is because, according to the register here, Google has been gradually rolling out Chrome's enhanced ad privacy. That's the technology that, unless switched off, they call it enhanced privacy, by the way, allows websites, allows websites to target the user with adverts tuned to their online activities interests based on their browser histories. Advanced ad privacy means Google gets your browser history.
How's that privacy?
Well, they're taking the same approach Congress uses when naming their bills, because the Inflation Reduction Act being a prime example.
Yeah, that fucking cracks me up, dude.
A pop-up announcing this functionality has been appearing for some folks since the July release of Chrome 115, which included support for Google's Topics API, which is part of the Tech Titans Privacy Sandbox project. It would appear more and more people are now seeing this pop up as those not keen on Chrome mining their browsing histories to support Google's advertising profits have been speaking up. We understand a small percentage of Chrome users are being pulled into the Topics API regime at a time, so you may not have noticed or been offered or alerted to anything. And how the Chocolate Factory asks you to agree or accept the ad depends on where you live rather than the laws, or rather the laws of where you live. Google next year aims to drop support for third-party cookies, which store browser data that ad companies use for tracking analytics to the frequent detriment of user privacy. The U.S. megacorp has developed a variety of replacement technologies, such as the Topics API, that will allow ad targeting to continue without cookie-based tracking and, it's claimed, no privacy consequences. Yeah, that Topics API means, okay, sure, the website can track you as long as they do it through Google. So it's like, yeah, you can track your users as long as we do too.
Not quite privacy, but possibly less crappy. And the reason I say that is, instead of a dozen places being able to be broken into to get my shit, there's one. That better? I mean, it might be better. Still sucks. Like, do I want to drink piss or eat shit? I mean, neither one of them is good options.
What do I fucking drink after this show? Options like that, Matt, man.
Well, with what they're doing, if they're driving a... no, because the cookies are actually on my computer, but multiple sites would still be collecting. Yeah, it's dropping it from, okay, there's 35 people collecting your info, to just me collecting your info, but I'm going to share it with 35 people.
Madman, it's worse than that. It means that as opposed to using the cookies API, which is an open standard that all browsers can implement, it's forcing parts of the internet to go through Google's API. Now, it's ads, so most people aren't going to bend, you know, be too upset about it because they can just turn it off. But what Google's really doing here is this is to see how well does the rest of the technology world adapt to Google grabbing part of the functionality of the internet and forcing it through their systems.
Oh, well, ads even not quite a small chunk of the internet. It's how the free internet works.
But you see my point.
It could actually kill the free internet.
This is Google trying to grab and lock up functionality of the internet. This is what Microsoft did with the early versions of IE that came with Windows XP. You know, how anybody who had to use a government website was stuck loading IE 8 or 6 or whatever for how long? That's what they're doing. They're grabbing a chunk of the internet and saying, this is now ours. This is proprietary, as opposed to the open standard. So, Topics
is looking better and better every day.
Topics essentially works like this. Rather than using cookies to track people around the web and figure out their interests from sites they visit and app they use, websites can ask Chrome directly via its Topics JavaScript API what sort of things the user is interested in, and then displays ads based on that. Chrome picks these topics of interest from studying the user's browser history. So if you visit loads of financial websites, one of your Chrome-selected topics may be investing. If a site you visit queries the Topics API, it may learn of this interest from Chrome and decide to serve you an advert about bonds or retirement funds. It also means websites can fetch your online interest straight from your browser. Yeah, like, that's...
straight from your browser if you're using Chrome.
Some people presented with the notification of the new regime complain it's a dark pattern, a term Google considers unfairly provocative, as Chrome users may think they're accepting or enabling enhanced privacy from ads, when in fact the Topics API is already enabled and will remain enabled and has to be disabled in the browser settings. That is to say, the pop-up is a notice that you've been opted in with a little link to your settings to disable the tech if you so wish. That's why they called it enhanced privacy, so you don't immediately just go turn it off. Because anybody who knows what it really is going to like, no. I'm not letting random WAS websites query my browser history for keywords. Thanks. Will Dorman, a security researcher from the Carnegie Mellon Software Engineering Institute's CERN Coordination Center, noted last week that Google's pop-up provides a default Got It button that dismisses the pop-up pane and does the exact opposite of what the title text describes. It leaves Chrome's ad targeted based on browsing history active, which is exactly the problem. That's why it's a dark pattern. It does the exact opposite of what you expect. It's the default option is what the company wants, not what the user wants. That's a dark pattern. Yeah, it's worth noting the pop-up does explicitly say you can make changes in Chrome settings and that you can switch off the Topics API support using those linked controls. Otherwise, it doesn't change the status quo. Where third-party cookies were previously used to deliver targeted ad, Chrome users also had to take steps to disable those. Nevertheless, there's more pushback now against the norms preferred by Google and other ad industry firms. Matthew Green, cryptography professor at Johns Hopkins in the U.S., encountered the pop-up and expressed his dismay. Quote, I don't want my browser keeping track of my browsing history to help serve me ads, and I definitely don't want my browser sharing any function of my browser history with every random website I visit, he sent via Twitter. And VC Paul Graham has derided ad targeting tech as spyware. Yeah, I'd say it basically.
Yeah.
It's spyware. Google has offered repeated reassurance that its topic API does not allow companies to identify those whose interests inform its ad API, but some developers claim topics may be useful for browser fingerprinting, and both Mozilla and Apple have said they won't adopt topics due to privacy concerns. No shit. Google's pop-up appears to have regional variations that make the call to action and the button labels clearer and more consistent. One version that's been reported is titled Turn On an Ad Privacy Feature, and there's a button that says Turn It On. Again, that's it's named backwards. Unlike the highlighted Got It button cited by Dorman and its unadorned settings companion that deters any decision until the linked menu is loaded, Turn It On in this variant menu is the same color as the No Thanks alternative and performs the action suggested by the pop-up title. The variation reflects the different legal regimes. Unlike America, where opt-out is acceptable and opt-in requirements are broadly opposed by marketers, EU data privacy rules are more demanding in the way that choices are presented. If you see a pop-up with Got It, you've probably been opted in based on where you are, and you need to turn off the Topics API support in Chrome settings if you don't like it, and you have the option to turn it on, you're being asked to opt in or out as you're in a region that requires it. Depending on what Chrome version you're using, whether you've been selected to start using Topic API, you can and whether you've been selected to start using Topics, you can switch the functionality off by visiting Chrome:// settings/add/privacy and or Chrome:// settings/privacy sandbox. Cut and paste these URLs in the address bar and jump straight to the controls. Users in the UK, EEA, and Switzerland who have not already opted out of Chrome's trials will be presented with an invitation to participate in Topics, manage their So they're varying what you see by based on where they think you are and trying to comply with different laws for that. But, here's the real question. How long before Google just doesn't let you turn this shit off?
Oh, I think they're testing that with this whole relying to you. And I don't know if they can not let you turn it off due to some EU regulations. So it's how long before people not in the EU can't turn this shit off? And that's as soon as Google thinks they have a high enough market cap to have you captured.
Well, what are the guides recently people were putting out for Windows 11? Was talking about changing your region to, like, English Europa or something like that. I gotta find it. Or basically set it to English, but not in the United States. Apparently, that prevents Microsoft from installing a whole bunch of their bullshit. And it's because they don't know what region you're in, so they don't know what laws are fair. So, I don't know. I think we should have stopped at where we were with Windows XP and just continued it, iterating from there rather than where we've gone with all this other shit. But, this is nuts. This is literally mining your browser history for ads and Google presenting it like a good thing.
Well, not just presenting it as a good thing, it's lying to you on what they're doing. Opt out should mean I don't want you to do something, not do it anyway, because you want to. Fuck that shit.
Well, I mean, Microsoft already made the precedent with the Windows updates thing, and how many people got the automatic Windows 10 update, and I think my computer's tried to go to Windows 11 like 4 times on me now. And I will eventually take this laptop to Windows 11. I'm going to be building a dedicated Linux machine, and this laptop will be relegated down to Windows-only tasks, basically software that I can't get to run anywhere else, like my CAD package, and some of my 3D printing programs that are Windows-only at the moment. But, I'm definitely going to be building up a dedicated Linux machine and using the KVM switcher to switch between them. And when I take this machine to Windows 11, I'm going to do a format, do the old, the Microsoft song, F disk format reinstall doodah, and do a clean install of Windows 11, lying to it about my region, and then running a cleanup tool that I've linked to one of the previous dojos to, not do all the bullshit. But it's kind of dumb that step one is, hack your computer to take out all the corporate bullshit. So,
step one on my new computer that I haven't installed anything is make my new computer usable.
Basically, yeah. But I think I'll probably order like one of those minis forums, little mini rigs or something for that, because well, maybe not. I don't know. They were interesting looking, but I don't think they have enough GPU grunt for what I want to do. Got enough CPU, just not enough GPU, so I don't know if that's really what I want to do or not. Who was it? GPD put out an interesting little product, which is basically one of those external GPUs, but they packaged it up nicely and stuck it on a different bus than Thunderbolt, so had some connector I wasn't familiar with on it, but it's like a SAS connector or something, so that might be worth looking into too, so you can just do little builds. But then again too, custom tower under the desk, it's just fuck, graphics cards are expensive these days.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. They may actually push me back into box computing. What I use my computer for mostly? TeamSpeak, video games, very, very rarely research. And research you can do on a toaster. But I think I might just get a little Steam toy for video games and not upgrade my computer.
The Steam Deck, yeah.
Yeah.
I like mine. I've got it hooked up to the TV downstairs. Works pretty well. I was actually looking at building a living room PC. Suave, I think, was the one who suggested, well, just hook your Steam Deck up to it and see how well that works. And it worked well enough that I ordered one of the little dedicated docks for it that, has a fan. I was playing the Ninja Turtles game on it earlier today. So
get the DLC?
Yes, I did.
Maybe next year.
But it doesn't add as much as I would like. I thought it would add more to it, but it adds a survival mode, which is kind of weird. But
yeah, and a couple of new characters. That's about it.
Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, Google is flat out just saying we're going to use your browser history to target you for ads, and they're lying about it. So I really don't think anybody should be using Chrome at this point outside of very specific scenarios, which are primarily you have to for some reason. Just make sure it's a good one. But, yeah. So, there's lots of guides out there on disabling the ads, too, but it pisses me off that you have to do it. You shouldn't have to do that. Step one should not be go fix all the settings. I'm sick of it in Windows. I don't like seeing it in Chrome. And I know every other fucking thing does it now, too. We talked about Intel adding telemetry to their drivers. So, yeah.
Oh, that's even worse to the drivers. The software I need to make this thing work wants to spy on me.
Yeah. So it really, and I also run a PyStorm on my network, and I go look at the logs for it and just see the amount of bullshit that it's blocking from idle computers on my network. It's like, seriously. It's retarded how much these things are trying to send out. It really is. They've decided that they're going to, extract value from you using a computer rather than selling you software. And, I get it from a business standpoint, but fuck. So, I don't know. Do you guys have anything else on that before we go on to the next one?
Yeah, what's the next one?
Next one is Gizmodo being shitty. Last week, Gizmodo's parent company, Geo Media, fired the staff of its Spanish language site, Gizmodo en Español, and began to replace their work with AI translations of English language articles, reports The Verge. Former Gizmodo writer Matthias S. Zalvia, and I'm getting these names wrong, I'm sure. Publicly mentioned the layoffs, which took place in a video call on August 29th in a social media post. On August 31st, Zafia wrote, "Hello, friends. On Tuesday, they shut down at Gizmodo ES to turn it over to a translation self-publisher. An AI took my job, literally." Previously, Gizmodo en Español had a small but dedicated team who wrote original content tailored specifically for Spanish-speaking readers, as well as producing translations of Gizmodo's English articles. The site represented Gizmodo's first foray into international markets when it launched in 2012 after being acquired from Guanabe. Newly published articles on the site now contain a link to their English version of the article and a disclaimer stating, via the translation from Google Translate, that this content has been automatically translated from the source material. Due to nuances of machine translation, there may be slight differences. For the original version, click here. They literally fired their translators and replaced them with AI. So far, Gizmodo's pivot to AI translation hasn't gone smoothly. On social media site X, journalist and Gizmodo reader Victor Milan noted that some of the site's news articles abruptly switched from Spanish to English midway through, possibly due to glitches in the translation system. Geo Media's decision to eschew human writers for AI is part of the recent trend of media companies experimenting with AI tools as a way to maximize content output while minimizing human labor costs. However, the practice remains controversial within the broader journalism community. Earlier this summer, Gizmodo began publishing AI-generated articles in English without informing or involving its editorial staff. The stories were found to contain multiple factual inaccuracies, leading the Gizmodo Union to criticize the practice as unethical. For Spanish-speaking audiences seeking news about science, technology, and internet culture, the loss of original reporting from Gizmodo en Español is potentially a major blow. And while AI translation technology has improved significantly over the past decade, experts say it can't fully replace human translators. Subtle errors, mistranslations, and a lack of cultural knowledge can impair the quality of automatically translated content. Even translating within the same language can cause... Translating within the same language.
Going from American English to English English.
Ah, okay. Can cause problems with context, as we recently saw with an AI-written Microsoft article that listed a Canadian food bank as a cannot-miss tourist destination, using the unfortunate rephrasing of a blurb from the food bank's official website that touted, "Consider going into it on an empty stomach." It's easy to imagine even more embarrassing mistakes due to autonomous translations between languages. Oh, that's... because there are... some of the goofy things like zip code versus postcode and, you know, erase versus rub out and, you know, other funny things like that, you know, little quirks of language.
And it gets even worse if you're going from Spanish like Latin America to Spanish like Spain. They don't use, I think it's ustedes. The formal version of tú isn't used in Latin America, but it is used in Spain. So their sentence structures are slightly different.
Yo no hablo español. So, you know, I I don't know that I would have caught that.
Similar with the Portuguese, like Portuguese in Brazil and Portuguese in Portugal. One upside to England being world dominant and then the U.S. being world dominant is English hasn't varied greatly among English-speaking countries. You can get by pretty well without being super stupid. If you're an American and you go to anywhere else, or if you're from any other English-speaking country and you come to America or another one. But not quite the same with other languages that have spread out, so as it were.
So far, we've seen in our AI coverage that automated publishing does not tend to go well, especially if sites want to cultivate a human readership. But with so many media companies chasing revenue through SEO manipulation and AI-written filler, it's unlikely we'll see the end of this apparently cost-cutting AI trend soon. So,
I could see them cutting down on some reporters, and if they have beefed up enough editorial staff, and as far as the whole Spanish Gizmodo, they could cut the ones translating and just, you know, keep a couple for proofreading the AI.
I don't think they even did that.
Focus on actual reporting in Spanish, because I think that's the big loss. The big loss isn't, oh, the bots translating this English article to Spanish. Yeah, it sucks for the dude that lost his job. I hate that. But the big loss is the Spanish reporter actually reporting things that are happening tech-wise in those countries. Because that's something the AI can't replace. And it's also a market that they're just giving up on.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there. But yeah, they literally tried to replace everyone's job with a shell script. So, guess we'll see how that goes.
It'll continue.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we had this story last week about Google having an AI assistant that will go to meetings and write PowerPoint presentations for you and read spreadsheets. I know several people who I work with on a routine basis that's basically their entire job is PowerPoint presentations, spreadsheets, and going to meetings. So,
well, fuck.
Yeah. But we'll see how this goes. Of course, with all this AI-generated shit, I'm wondering how long before courts start saying, if you didn't record it on traditional tape or paper, it's not admissible.
Yeah. You can manipulate video now as well.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty easily.
So, yeah, I'm wondering how long before they start saying things like, you know, if it's not on, you know, analog media, it just doesn't count. If it's digital, we just don't care. Because it's too easy to make fake digital stuff these days.
Or just get rid of the judges, let AI do everything.
I've seen that episode of
Futurama. No, we're
not
going Lex when it comes to our justice system.
Oh, man, it's not like we're doing anything else stupid right now with our societies. You know?
Besides picking which octogenarian we're going to blame today's problems on.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be like that episode of Futurama where they had the Apple II as a judge, and it just had the loading bar.
Yeah. We're not making enough stupid decisions right now. We need to do that one. It's like, I'm sick of hearing AI is going to be doing everything. AI is going to save us from this. AI will save us from that. Bullshit. This is the latest buzzword.
AI is going to turn the internet into a useless, more of a
the
useless
internet's already
wasteland.
Fucking useless, Mops.
I said more of. I corrected myself.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I like using it to find documents. Research is pretty nice on it.
It is, but it's getting harder and harder to use traditional search engines. They just don't show you any fucking results you want anymore.
Well, they're more interested in trying to sell you anything than be useful. And that was DuckDuckGo's whole model, is we're going to be a useful search engine rather than trying to sell you shit, and then they got big.
Yep.
So, y'all know about margalena.nu, huh? You won't find what you're looking for, you find something. Is that the one you sent me the other day, are you? What was that search engine you sent the other day?
Wibbly?
Wibbly?
W-I-B-Y? Twitch.me. Yeah, you can post it in the. That's the one there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll throw that in the IRC here. But no, I haven't looked at this Margellinia, that in you. I have no idea, how to say that.
Or the link into the. In the TeamSpeak, and I'll go and have a look at it.
There you go. All right. While RU is digging into that, let's talk about Forever 21. Forever 21 data breach affects half a million people. Why does a clothing company have data on half a million people? That's the real
question. They're collecting data on everyone that buys their shit.
Clothing giant Forever 21 said a data breach earlier this year affects more than half a million individuals. A data breach notice followed with Maine's Attorney General said that the fashion giant was hacked over a three-month period beginning in early January of 2023, which during which intruders obtained files from its systems. This data includes the personal information of current and former employees, said Lorena Taroba Uchura, a spokesperson for Forever 21 via public relations firm FTI Consulting in an email to TechCrunch. Could you have any more corporate linkages in there? I mean, you know, a spokesperson through a public relations firm via email and a name that you could not pronounce. According to the notice, Forever 21 notified 539,207 people that the breach data included their name, date of birth, bank account number, and social security number, as well as information regarding employees' Forever 21 health plan, including enrollment and premiums paid. Forever 21 did not describe the incident beyond a breach of its systems, but noted that, quote, Forever 21 has taken steps to help assure the unauthorized third party no longer has access to the data. It's not clear how Forever 21 obtained this claim of assurance. They paid the ransom. That's how. The ambiguous wording of the notice could imply that the company paid the hacker in exchange for deleting the data. It's not uncommon for ransomware and extortion groups to threaten to publish the data they steal if the victim does not meet a ransom demand, but security experts have long said it's not possible to trust that the threat actor has deleted the data as claimed. Well, of course not. You just, don't release it. You don't delete it. And then every year you just threaten them. Say, we still have it. We'll release it unless you make this year's payment. Forever 21 spokesperson Taroba Uchura declined to comment further. Forever 21 has about 500 retail locations and an online store. It's the second data breach in recent years after a massive theft of credit card numbers from its store's point-of-sale machines in 2017. Last week, retail giant Shein and Forever 21 announced a partnership that would allow both brands to reach each other's customers, including a deal by Shein to acquire about a third of Forever 21's operator, Spark Group. It's not clear if the news of Forever 21's data breach would affect the partnership. So, it was the employees. I was kind of wondering, because it's like, okay, I get if you're buying online that they would have some information, but...
A lot of places anymore, when you go through checkout...
They ask for a bunch of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, they ask for your phone number or your email address.
I usually say, why do you need my phone number for me to buy batteries? And then they say, well, it's just so we can send you coupons. I'm like, I'm good. And he's like, what, you don't have an email address? No, I don't. It's like, I've actually had him ask me that before because, it's like, no. It's like, what? It's only so we can send you coupons. I don't have an email address. I don't believe you. I don't care. I'm not giving you an email address. Are you going to sell me what I want or am I going to leave? Oh, fine. I've had him get real pissy with me for not giving them the information. I think they get a bonus or... something, I don't know. Maybe just somebody's
it's not over, quite a bonus. It's
overly
they
dedicated.
Get crapped on by their boss.
Yeah. It's like, no, you don't need my information for this. It's like, I don't come in your store often enough for you to need my information. I'm not going to use your coupons because it's going to be for shit I don't buy anyways. And, fuck off. Ugh. So, anyways. But yeah, in this case it was their employees' data, which, being a retail store, I'm sure they have tons of teenagers who've been working for them in malls. And I'm betting they paid the ransom to the hacker. It'll show up in their budget as consulting services on their public, you know, finance statements.
Yeah, and I don't think it's just their employees. I think they got the marketing from for their customers.
Oh, probably.
It might just be phone number and email address, but I bet they got at least phone number and email address for all their customers.
You have anything on that one, are you?
No, I was looking at the search engine it was given.
Oh, that Psychro sent us?
Yeah, it's actually not bad.
Cool.
Very similar to the one I gave you. But I think this is a little more than the other one. Like, more here than the other search engine.
Okay, cool.
We'll have to play with that later. I'm just skipping through the random button. And, it's very 1990s internet, you know. Yeah, just random shit everywhere. It's great.
So this next article is from 9to5 Mac. The Wall Street Journal reports this morning that Apple iPhone and other foreign technology devices have been banned for use in Chinese government agencies. Workers are no longer allowed to use these devices for work or even to bring them into the office premises. This is a significant expansion of a long-standing Beijing policy, which aims to cut reliance on foreign technology amid foreign cybersecurity threats. Apple iPhone holds a majority share of high-end smartphone sales in China, partially because rival Huawei has struggled to develop competitive 5G handsets in the wake of U.S. sanctions. The imposition of such a ban on the use of Apple devices in government premises has the potential to impact the allure of the company's brand in China, harboring rumors of possible spying or interference, and possibly cut into customer sales. Considering Apple has been fairly cooperative with China, this is more about hurting Apple in the market than it is Apple actually spying on anybody. It also flies in the face of Apple's marketing of the iPhone as a privacy-first platform. Somewhat ironically, critics argue that Apple weakens the security of the iPhone in China in order to comply with local laws. For instance, iCloud data for Chinese citizens is stored on data center premises geographically located inside China, potentially making it easier for the state to intercept. Apple says it only holds the decryption keys for that information, however. In general, foreign relations with China remain taut. The U.S. has imposed various sanctions on the country, such as restricting advanced semiconductor exports in an effort to limit China's military power. Meanwhile, China is on a campaign to reduce its dependency on foreign tech as much as possible, with the aim to develop a wholly independent domestic supply chain. Well, yeah, they've already stolen enough technology, they probably could do it. Well, stolen and gotten through agreement, I guess would be the better way to put it, because anybody manufacturing anything in China has to share it. I had another story, but I ended up ditching it, about how if you do business in China, you have to give your source code to the Chinese government if you're doing software, which gives them an edge in finding vulnerabilities that they can exploit throughout the world. So there was some theory that was how they got into Office 365 before Microsoft finally admitted that it was an engineer's account who got compromised. But I wouldn't put it past China to try to develop their own systems and force everyone inside on them. So,
yeah, and moves they're making towards Taiwan, they'll probably be able to corner the semiconductor market in a few years.
Well, assuming we don't get any U.S. plants up and running. I know they're trying, but apparently the TSMC plant in Arizona has had some serious management problems, so who knows if that's actually going to get up and running or not. Next article.
Oh, but from an actual standpoint of security, I can understand at least kind of wanting their government employees on something made in China, even though I'm not sure. Well, now I think everyone's spying on me. But originally, I would say U.S. companies should be pretty good about not stealing your shit, but everyone's spying on you now. Apple, everyone is spying on you. So I can understand China saying, okay, we want only the Chinese spying on our government officials, so at least we know where their data is being stored, right here in Beijing, rather than anywhere else. Because we don't want them open to blackmail, or, I don't know, the Americans stealing our state secrets. We're doing our job, we're trying to steal their state secrets.
I think we've stolen most of their state secrets. Most of their state secrets are fairly easy to guess.
Well, I'm thinking, when I'm thinking state secrets, it's more military actions, troop deployments.
Mm.
And I know they've been pretty open with their Belt and Road and building bases everywhere they can. But there's also still some stuff I think they're trying to keep close to the vest.
Yeah, anybody who's not watching this stuff on the Belt and Road, go look at the Chinese deployment across Africa. You will be surprised.
Nowhere near as many military bases as America.
True. But in this instance, we're assuming Americans are the good guys. I know that's a stretch, but...
Ha!
I like the immediate reaction there, sorry.
Sorry.
Oh, no, it's a good one. I mean, I'm... Up until the last decade or so, I would be really staunch arguing, no, we are the good guys, but...
Yeah, I would have too. I'm with Batman.
We're advocating cutting off dudes' genitals and calling them ma'am. We're at the point of asking, are we the baddies? And he got some arguments on us being the baddies right now.
I don't know if we're the
I'm
baddies.
I'm hoping we fix it. But...
I don't know if we're the baddies, but we might be the useful idiots, so...
Okay. I can go useful idiot, but I'm still questioning, are we the baddies?
Anyways.
Yeah, next story.
Next story. This one is from Ars Technica. A prominent anti-vaccine activist, Joseph Mercola, yesterday lost a lawsuit attempting to force YouTube to provide access to videos that were removed from the platform after YouTube banned his channels. Mercola had tried to argue...
Mercola invented the fucking mRNA technology. How's he anti-vaccine?
Well, that's how the article's presenting him.
Yeah, sorry, I just had to add that.
Mercola tried to argue that YouTube owed him more than $75,000 in damages for breaching its own user contract and denying him access to his videos. However, in an order dismissing Mercola's complaint, so they didn't actually go to trial, it was dismissed, U.S. Magistrate Judge Laurel Baylor wrote that according to the contract Mercola signed, YouTube was under no obligation to host Mercola's content after terminating his channel in 2021 for violating YouTube's community guidelines by posting medical misinformation about COVID-19 and vaccines. Quote, the court found no breach because there is no provision in the terms of service that requires YouTube to maintain particular content or be a storage site for users' contents, Baylor wrote. Unquote. Because Mercola's contract with YouTube was found to be enforceable and, quote, YouTube had the discretion to take down content that harmed its users, unquote, Baylor said that Mercola did not plausibly plead claims for breach of contract or unjust enrichment. Mercola's complaint was dismissed without leave to amend. So, yeah, they shut him down. They said, no, this complaint's done. Ours could not immediately reach Google or Mercola for comment. In his complaint, Mercola described himself as a board-certified physician, and a leader in the field of natural health, who was an early user of YouTube and began sharing video content in or around 2005, the year YouTube was founded. Over time, Mercola amassed 300,000 subscribers to a YouTube channel that, quote, garnered 50 million views, unquote, by posting professionally made videos that link to his website, which promotes natural health and provides health articles, optimizes wellness products, medical news, and a free newsletter. Researchers and regulators described Mercola's background to the New York Times a little differently. They claimed that at one point that he was at one point the most influential spreader of coronavirus misinformation and profited from misleading claims about COVID-19 vaccines. But Mercola said that YouTube never sent him any notices that his content was out of line with the video platform's community guidelines. He also claimed that after YouTube updated its policy to prevent COVID-19 information, he, quote, carefully avoided posting any content that mentioned COVID-19 vaccines or discussed the COVID-19 outbreak in a manner that YouTube might determine was out of line with official government positions of COVID-19, unquote. Mercola claimed that he first became aware that YouTube was planning to ban his channel when the Washington Post published an article about it. He told the Post he was being censored. In his complaint, he said that within 6 months of the Post article's publishing, he got a message that his channels were banned, effective immediately, for violating YouTube's new policy on vaccine misinformation. His attempt to appeal YouTube's decision was denied, according to Beeler's order. And at that point, YouTube told Mercola, after reviewing his channel carefully, YouTube confirmed that it violates our community guidelines. Quote, we won't be putting your channel back up on YouTube, unquote, the email said. With no other option to fight back, Mercola sued, alleging that YouTube had failed to provide advance notice of the vaccine misinformation policy before terminating the channel and the account. Warned Mercola of the termination or act fairly in good faith. He also claimed that YouTube failed to give him access to his content, which he claimed that YouTube's terms of use required. Finally, he said YouTube had been unjustly enriched for retaining his content and converting it exclusively to YouTube's use. Beeler rejected all these arguments, agreeing with YouTube that there was no breach of contract, no damages should be awarded, and Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act barred Mercola's claims. Quote, YouTube has the discretion to terminate channels without warning after a single case of severe abuse, unquote, Beeler wrote. Quote, under the contract, this determination was discretionary. The contract said that, quote, if we reasonably believe that any content is in breach of this agreement or may cause harm, we may remove or take down that content in our discretion. So, commenting on Mercola's case, legal expert Eric Goldman wrote, lawsuits over content removals never succeed. It's not surprising, but it is just kind of... It basically reinforces what we've known, that these platforms are not open, they're not free speech. If you post... YouTube gets to play editor, and even though they're not supposed to be performing editorial content, the judge basically gave them free rein to do so and said Section 230 protects it.
But that only applies if you're not being an editor.
Not no more. Well, according to that judge, they can do whatever the fuck they want, and they have Section 230 protection.
Look at the precedent that would have been set if he had one. That YouTube would have been on the hook for everyone they've demonetized.
It depends on how they wrote the opinion on him winning. They could just say, YouTube should have given you back your videos. Here's X amount of dollars that we think is appropriate. Because as far as the misinformation or harmful, I hate it, but they use the reasonable standard, and it's subjective.
So, I'm going to say something a little odd here. I don't think the judge was wrong. With the exception of the 230 thing being stupid, but I think the whole law is stupid. YouTube is not a public platform. It's a private one. It's owned by Google or Alphabet. They have a right to say, we don't want to host that. It's their computers. It's their systems. If that's truth. I mean, it is the thing. It's obnoxious because it's also one of the largest communication platforms in the world, and they're picking and choosing what goes on it. There's a reason I don't post my stuff on YouTube, at least not decking. There's a reason, you know, if I ever do a YouTube channel, it won't be about politics or news. It'll just be, you know, technology or whatever it is I'm playing with, 3D printing, it won't be, you know, anything controversial because you don't get to, you know, they might claim to be a free speech platform, but they're lying. It's proven right there. And I mean, they didn't even get to discuss, you know, get to the trial. It was dismissed with prejudice, as in, we don't think there's a breach of contract. Go away. And you know what? Given how stupid these contracts are these days, there probably wasn't a breach of contract. Because you don't have a choice. It's either you agree to these onerous terms or you don't use the service. Period.
And I guess it was his fault for not having backups of his own material.
Yeah.
YouTube isn't an archive.
I don't like it, but I can see exactly why the judge did what they did. I mean, I would much prefer that, you know, YouTube not ban people for having disagreeable opinions. You know, agree or disagree about the vaccine. I mean, all evidence to the contrary. You know, who cares? It's they censored an opinion they didn't like. Especially in the midst of a very stressful time where a lot of things really were up in the air. How could you make a claim on the vaccine one way or the other when the thing hadn't, I mean, it had only been out for months. It's not like it had been extensively tested. It's not like the measles, I forget the name of the measles, mumps, rubella one that's been around for 30 years where, you know, it's kind of a stretch to say it hurts people because the
evidence... And it was tested for a decade before it was rolled out.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, when you have that kind of, you know, when you say, okay, vaccines are immune from medical malpractice, if they have that kind of scrutiny attached to them, I can understand why. But when you're saying that this RNA thing that they developed in less than a year, did almost no testing on, refused to this day to publish their testing data, and, you know, was distributed through the government as opposed to through doctors... I can understand the hesitation and, you know, the whole don't ask questions, just do what you're told, take the fucking shot. I can understand. I mean, what's the quickest way to empty a stadium? You know, get on the PA and say, please don't run. There's no issue here. So, yeah, I mean, it's YouTube's platform. They can do what they want. But like you said, they're playing editorial. So I don't think Section 230 should have applied. But this judge just said it does. So Section 230 basically means social media companies are free to delete any content they don't like. So just assume on any social media platform, you just have to assume that any opinions they don't like have been removed or blocked or shadow banned or whatever term.
And if you're running a YouTube channel, you're not an archive. If you want to keep your stuff, back it up on your own system.
That's right. I mean, I hate it. I don't like it, but I think that is the current state of the law. I'd like to see it changed.
At least correctly interpreted.
Yeah. I mean, please, somebody tell me I'm wrong about this. I would love to be wrong about this.
You're not wrong about what you're stating. I am going to say the judge is wrong about their interpretation of 230.
Yeah, because they're performing editorial content by banning this, but obviously the judge probably thinks that you shouldn't allow anti-vaxxers either. So, you know, that's not... Again, that's not the question. It should have been agnostic to the content, except the judge is simply accepting that... There's no room to argue there that YouTube has determined your content to be harmful, therefore it's not allowed. Well, what if I don't think my content's harmful? You know, there's no mediation process there. It's simply Google's allowed to say that it's harmful. Game over. You know? There's no actual process there. It's just... Yeah, this is why the framers put due process rights in the Constitution, because if they can just declare you to be if you can just be declared to be a terrorist and locked up without trial, oops. Wait, we do that now. I can't think of a good example.
And there isn't one, because the process is actually for the government. This would have fallen under free association, and from the framers' point of view, Google should be able to ban anyone they want from their system for any reason. But also, when it comes to what Google has set up with YouTube, they need to be open and honest on what their guidelines are, and they aren't.
I agree with that 100%. That is the big problem, is you don't know what the rules are, and they change them.
Because you can discuss vaccines only if you discuss them from the point of view they want, which is not having a discussion. So if they don't want to discuss vaccines or their efficacy, just say, we don't discuss that. We don't have political conversations here. We're here for funny cat videos and makeup tutorials. And then stick with that. But you can't say, we can discuss vaccines, but only from this particular point of view.
Yeah, just don't present your platform as a free speech platform if that's the game you're going to play.
Yeah, because the big interpretation of 230, there was limits placed on what you could have in a forum. If you were running a strictly, this is a car forum, you could ban people for discussing My Little Pony. But you were also just saying, this is my forum. YouTube isn't saying, this is what we're discussing. They're saying, you can discuss just about anything here, and then going back on their word after you've got a channel.
So, are you anything on that before we do the last article?
No.
Last article is from The Verge. Microsoft to stop forcing Windows 11 users into Edge in EU countries. Basically, they're cleaning it up so that Microsoft's apps will respect whatever you set as the default browser, rather than automatically going into Edge. Like, you know, even on Windows 10, if you, you know, do the file search or do the search on the start menu, and, you know, for whatever reason, it decides to give you a web search instead of the program name you were typing in, and you press Enter, it will open that in Edge, no matter what your default browser is right now. They're changing that in the EU only, because the GDPR, I think, but among other, you know, controls in the EU, that they're going to actually respect your settings and open the default browser, not just Edge, but they're only doing it in the EU. They're also apparently unbundling Teams from 365 in the EU, but not in the States. So, yeah. There's not really much to say here other than it's just the hope was that Microsoft would go lowest common denominator, but they're not. They're going to try to force you, you know, based on whatever region it thinks you're in, into whatever they can get away with. So, I mean, again, it's just clarifying. These companies are no longer about giving you what you want. They're no longer about giving the user the best experience. They're about trying to maximize revenue. So, you know, as a consumer operating system, I would say stay away from it. Move on. Steam Deck. Or learn Linux. I know it's hard to do because everything's been so Windows-focused for so long. Of course, businesses are pretty well stuck on it. But I still say, you know, they're moving away from being user-focused and now just being into revenue-focused. So I'd try to stay away from them if you could. And, I mean, this proves it. The fact that they can separate it out for the EU, but they're not going to go ahead and do that for the U.S. as well. Yeah, that just proves it.
Yeah, and I think what they're doing is somewhat lowest common because they're... The EU is a large enough market that they can set their own rules there and still not lose other markets. But the big issue is we stopped teaching people morals and just said the free market itself is what should guide you. But the reason the free market worked is we had a moral people. Because the free market doesn't care whether you're doing something good or bad. It just cares, does someone want what you're offering? And people, there are sick people that want anything.
Yeah. But, of course, that's all I've got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site. Project Enigma when I finally get it done. I haven't worked on it at all, and I'm going to be out of town next week. So maybe I don't. I'm not going to give a date. Are you? Closing thoughts.
Yeah, if you see a man in a wheelchair, check his shoes. If they're dirty, be suspicious.
That's a good closing thought. Oh, Psychro said he sent me some antsy art on Reddit for the... Yeah. If we're looking at putting together an Enigma BBS to run on the site. And I'm not gonna post it on the website. Well, I'm not going to post a client on the website. It's going to be... I'll look at that. I haven't checked my Reddit in a couple of weeks. Yeah, you're going to actually have to get a client and connect to it over SSH, and it's going to be full of warnings like, don't trust this system. We're not claiming to be secure. We're not claiming anything you put here will be here tomorrow. You know, shit like that. So, sync term, yeah, that was one of them. I looked at a couple of different clients, but it needs to be one that supports SSH because I'm not going to do a plain telnet system over the internet. And it does. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll look at that one. And Madman, closing thoughts.
What would fix the Microsoft problem is if schools stopped teaching Microsoft in computer class and started teaching computers in computer class. If people knew how easy a lot of Linux distros were, I think Microsoft wouldn't have as much of a hold as they do.
You know, I had some good success in about the 2010s putting several family members on Ubuntu for a while up until... Well, my sister wanted to play The Sims, and I forget what it was Mom wanted to install. But, yeah, I put a couple of family members on Ubuntu for a while, and, you know, for just internet and email stuff, they didn't care.
And with the Steam Deck, I think gaming's not going to be an issue much longer. And I do believe most streaming platforms you can watch on Linux.
You can, but a lot of them, they don't have the Wildvine DRM, so they won't do HD content. They cap out at 720 because you don't have the DRM in place. Now, using like an Android client or something might be a way around that. So.
Yeah, my closing thoughts. Schools need to start teaching computing and stop teaching Microsoft.
Yeah, that'd be a good way to do it. Anyways, that's all I got. I'm going to play the sound effects and close us out.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Oh, I'll pass it out.
Shut up, Wesley.